This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, anyone who was around in 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11 won't forget the crash in the Irish economy caused by property. It changed everything in the country, including the government, and some very prominent banks and bankers, and indeed the economic watchdog who assured us just before the crash that everything was fine and banks were well financed. Now, in China, there is a crash of some magnitude that has been compared to what happened to us, and the Chinese economy is in trouble in a big way. And the US economy, of course, is also a matter of some contention. Some people think it's doing really well and can't understand why the President Joe Biden is not getting the credit for the buoyancy of the American economy. And of course, the most consequential election in our lifetime will take place in November, and Biden or Donald Trump will be the next president for 4 years. And it could be very, very serious indeed if the result turns out the wrong way. And to discuss the economics of America and indeed what's happening in China, it's a pleasure to welcome Chris Johns to the program again. Chris is former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland and now a respected commentator. Chris, this news from China is remarkable in many ways. But can I start by asking you about the United States, where the state of the economy or people's perception of the economic performance of the Biden administration will probably be one of the defining questions in the presidential election. What's happening in America? Because lots of people say good things and good things about policies ascribed to Joe Biden, yet he's not getting any credit.
Yeah, it's beyond cliche almost now to remind people that somebody very famous once said it's the economy, stupid.
Yeah.
Because what's happening in the States right now is that it clearly isn't. Because if you look at the various polls, and there are dozens of them, you can look at Gallup, you can look at CBS, two that I've been looking at only this morning, they all say the same thing. The Gallup confidence index in the US economy is very low. It's actually at the same level that it was at when Joe Biden took office. It fell precipitately through the early years of his presidency, and only just recently, and this is an important point to which I think we'll come back to, it's starting to tick up. But it's only got back to where it was, despite the fact that the economy, and I'll talk about that in a second, has done very, very well. A second poll worth remarking on, which again, as I say, is typical, is a CBS poll taken very recently. 65% of Americans remember the economy as being good under Donald Trump.
Yes.
And only 38% say that the economy is good in the same way under Biden. And 60% of voters in that same survey say the economy is bad under Biden. Now, there's lots of things going on, and economists are fighting over just why this is the case. And one very simple thing to say is that in all sorts of different aspects of our lives, memory is a very unreliable friend, and people are misremembering the Trump years for some strange reason. But one of the many things that's going on is the effects of the pandemic, Eamon, that I think are distorting people's memories. Because when Trump took over, the economy was actually in its one of its longest, if not its actually its longest expansions ever. It was a very stable economy. Crucially, inflation was at 2% or just under. And that meant that people really didn't talk about inflation. They didn't notice prices going up if they were going up by that little amount. And inflation was a real non-issue. And then the pandemic came along and distorted everything. So Trump, for example, claims that he created lots of jobs during his presidency. And during the first 3 years of his presidency, that's actually true. And in those first 3 years, he created, or rather the economy created, there's always an argument about how much presidents are actually responsible for, 6 million jobs in the first 3 years. And then the pandemic hit. And so he ended his presidency with less jobs in the US economy than when he started. In the first 3 years of Biden's presidency, remember that figure of 6 million for Trump? The figure is 15 million. Right. Now, again, that's distorted a bit by the pandemic because there was a big bounce back. But go back to Obama. His first 3 years saw 7 million jobs created. So he was better than Trump. So I could then start to go through a whole bunch of other economic statistics that show that this memory of the economy being much better under Trump is a false memory. It is better under Biden on a whole host of metrics. Right. But the nuances and the distortions principally caused by the pandemic, but also caused, I think, just by tribal politics. People don't want to remember Trump as being worse than Biden because of American tribalism. So in a way, it's a non-economic factor. But if we go through the various bits of data, and believe me, I could bore you to death for hours about real wages, unemployment, number of jobs, GDP, poverty rates, the picture of the Biden economy is an incredibly positive one. And the picture of the Trump economy, as I say, is an okay one up until the pandemic hit. And then, of course, that just distorted everything.
Yeah. And as I'm sure you know, the person who said it's the economy stupid was Bill Clinton.
That's right.
And he said it during his presidential contest against George Bush Sr., who ended up losing to Clinton and being a one-term president. Now, it's always the economy, but what's said about the American economy and also said about the Chinese economy is that those economies affect us all. Is that accurate? And in particular, there's another question that's exercising some people here, that Ireland's stand it's taken over the Israeli-Palestine situation might alienate American business and might be costly for us. Can I ask you about, first of all, the possibility that something happening in China or indeed in the United States can have a very adverse effect here?
Yeah, well, China is currently not growing very much. And we've been used since 1978, actually, under the economic reforms introduced by an ex-Chinese leader called Deng Xiaoping. They had 20, 25 years of often double-digit GDP growth, the most extraordinary expansion that the world really has ever seen. And anybody that went to China to have a look at its economy and tried to figure out what was going on just came back and said, you know, wow, it's extraordinary. Whole cities are springing up, being constructed almost overnight. And within that story, that's an important point because it was a very investment spending-led recovery. So it was driven by capital spending rather than the consumer. And that's different to economic expansions that have typically taken place in the West. And it seems now that they overbuilt. An awful lot of these cities, frankly, not just development areas, apartment blocks. After our property crisis in Ireland, got used to the idea of ghost estates. They've long gone, of course, and we've got a different kind of property crisis now. But in China, they've got ghost cities they've got whole towns and cities virtually empty with these apartment blocks that they've built that nobody seems to want. And the prices, the secondhand prices, at least, of property in China are now going down. So they've got an old-fashioned property crisis that we would recognize here in the West, particularly in Ireland. We know what happens when you have a property crisis. Your banks go bust and your economy suffers unless you get it sorted out in one way or another. And China's different to the West in that, of course, a lot of the banks that are exposed are government banks, and or if not actually owned by the government, then certainly controlled, supported in various ways by the Chinese Communist Party. So there are lots of similarities, but a lot of differences in terms of the way this has been handled. And China, unlike us, as a result of this property crash, has a deflation problem. Prices are at best flat, if not actually falling in China. And this has all sorts of implications, most obviously for China itself, because they've got to sort this out. Otherwise, it's going to be a lingering, festering problem for many, many years. And some people think that China, for example, could mimic the Japanese experience because they had their big property crash all the way back in 1989. And they've struggled, the Japanese, for decades dealing with the consequences of that. Their own stock market, for example, in Japan, has only just got back to where it was in 1989. That's a barometer, if you like, of how long it's taken them to recover from that period. Chinese equities, over the course of the last year or so, the stock market there has been crashing, quite frankly, on the back of this property crisis. And as I say, they have very little economic growth and a little bit of political social disturbance as well, as to ordinary Chinese people are starting to feel this. So it has implications for China in particular, but also has implications for everybody else, because on some measures, the Chinese economy is the biggest in the world. On others, it's the second behind the US. Either way, it's big and it affects us. It affects us in all sorts of different ways. First of all, every economy here, Ireland, the UK, sells to China.
Yes.
So demand is weak for our exports to China. They are not buying nearly as much stuff as they used to. So sales of things like iPhones, for example, are down in China. So that's affected Apple's share price. And as you know, Apple's profits are very important to Ireland because we get a lot of tax. So there are all these linkages. China will affect our inflation rate. So if China was growing gangbusters right now, as it had a few years ago, you would see things like oil prices, natural gas prices, much higher than they are today. So that would affect our inflation rate. So the linkages are many and varied.
And what about the linkage between China and the US? Because they do trade a lot with each other. And this was something Trump, he took exception, didn't he, to that?
Well, he did big time. And he put a lot of tariffs on Chinese exports to the United States, which, interestingly, Joe Biden continued, and in some cases, he actually expanded. And it is perhaps the last one only remaining bipartisan issue in Washington, D.C., is to be worried about or indeed against China. And that has all sorts of different consequences. The way in which China, frankly, rips off American intellectual property and everybody's intellectual property is a big deal. The way in which China spies on the West in all sorts of different ways. You know that there are various Chinese technology companies. Huawei is one that looked like it was going to be building all our mobile phone networks around the world. And that came to an abrupt halt a couple of years ago. And there are other Chinese companies, the most recent one being TikTok, the video sharing app that politicians in Washington, D.C. are trying to force its owner, a company called ByteDance, to sell its American operations. They do not want TikTok being part of American social life. And there is a big row brewing over that. Donald Trump has promised, and of course, we promises and actual delivery are two different things, particularly when it comes to Donald Trump.
That gentleman,
he said that he will increase his tariffs, which he started during his first presidency, to 60%, a 60% tariff on all Chinese exports to the United States. Bloomberg Economics, a very serious entity, has modeled the implications of that and has said that that will probably drive Chinese exports to the United States, which currently run, I think, at about $700 billion a year, to zero. That's how profound a consequence that would. Then that would be the pure economics, the pure trade, exports and import consequences of the 60% tariff. It would raise American inflation because ultimately, contrary to what Mr. Trump often asserts, the people who end up paying for tariffs are usually the consumers of the products. And yes. So that would be inflation going up in the United States. So I doubt that it will happen in the way that Trump thinks it's going to happen, because it's those economic consequences are bad enough. But think about the political consequences, about the relationship between China and the United States if Chinese exports to the United States go to zero. That would be a trade war on a par, like nothing else we've ever seen. And the consequences, A, would be dreadful, and B, probably quite unforeseeable.
At the same time as that would or might happen, the situation between China mainland and Taiwan is very much on the Chinese radar now. And many people believe that watching the Americans in particular, but the West overall, its rather weak response in terms of helping Ukraine, and in the case of the United States Congress, the refusal to give Ukraine the arms and money that it requires at the moment, that is sending a message or a signal that Chinese will pick up on, that America, having once been what was known as the world's policeman, is no longer willing to adopt that role. And that may encourage the Chinese, as well as the bad relations to do with economies, to make a move on Taiwan, which Xi Jinping frequently references.
Yeah, China has always towed a consistent line that Taiwan is part of Greater China and that it will one day be reintegrated in the way that Hong Kong was. And it's never deviated from that line. And I've seen it argued both ways from the economic perspective, which is that weakness of the Chinese economy is going to cause enough domestic political trouble for Xi Jinping that the temptation to almost use an invasion of Taiwan as a distraction from domestic woes is building and eventually will become too great to resist. I've seen it argued the other way, which is that his domestic woes are such a distraction. He's got to sort those out before he goes on any international adventure. And so in a way, we're trying to second guess the thinking of one individual. I've certainly never met him. I suspect you haven't either. So who knows what is going on in his mind. But I've seen the economy and its woes argued both ways for whether it will increase or decrease the chances of a Taiwanese invasion. The thing that I think is actually more important than the economy is your reference to what's happening in Ukraine. Because during the first year or so of that war, China looked at what was going on in Ukraine and was as surprised as Putin by the unified reaction of the West. And that was, yes, I think, definitely a deterrent to anything that it was planning for a military invasion of Taiwan. And everybody was surprised by the unanimity of the West during that first year or so of the Ukraine war. I think that China will have noticed that unanimity has fractured.
Yes.
I think people talk about the US possibly maybe going missing under a Trump presidency from that world policeman role. I think it's already happened, Eamon.
Yeah, but they have under Biden. I mean, he did manage to galvanize NATO, the NATO alliance. Sweden and Finland have joined NATO now. And in many ways, Biden saved the day for the response for Ukraine and galvanize NATO to be an effective force to support Ukraine and for NATO countries to fund as much as they could Ukraine's efforts to resist. That all goes out the window if Trump is the next president. Because
arguably, it's already gone out the window, Eamon, because I think what's happened with this stalled latest Biden-Ukrainian aid package, which has attracted so much publicity, this $50, $60 billion for Ukraine, which is stuck in Congress, is that people have realized that you own, no matter who wins the election in November, whether it's Biden or Trump, you only need one chamber of Congress, whether it's the Senate or the House of Representatives, yes, to be a bloc. And there are enough Republicans now, like J.D. Vance, you know, that very well-known senator, yes, that wrote Hillbilly Elegy, wrote an article in the FT recently about why the West or America shouldn't give another penny to Ukraine. There are enough Republicans now who believe this. And it, so in a way, I don't think it matters who wins the presidency. You only need one chamber to be run by these Republicans, which is distinctly possible in November, given that it's not just a presidential election, that Ukraine is not going to get any American funding. And I think what I think a really interesting development over recent weeks, which hasn't received nearly enough publicity, is that I think Emmanuel Macron has realized this. And I think he's had something of an epiphany. Because if you remember, at the early phase of the Ukraine war, he was criticized heavily throughout the West for being neutral about Russia, shall we say, about trying to cozy up to Putin, phoning him and having all sorts of dialogue with him. And now he's come out in a completely different way just over the last week or so. And I think it's because his words, his actions, the very public row he's picked with Germany, Scholz, Chancellor Scholz in particular, over a particular issue. It's the delivery of something called a Taurus cruise missile, a missile made by Germany. And Germany is refusing to send its cruise missiles in a way that both France and the UK have done. And he's used some pretty strong language about Germany and about the way Germany's gone missing in terms of its aid for Ukraine. And I think this is the sort of thing that China is now noticing, that the West is fractured, that, you know, Macron has changed his mind. He realizes the threat that Russia poses to Europe, not just Ukraine, and that Scholz and Germany disagrees quite publicly. They're doing something that they haven't done for a long time. They're rowing in public. These two normally keep their arguments for behind closed doors and try to present this great Franco-German alliance thing, which is, I think that will, at the margin, that encourages people like Xi to think, okay, the Ukraine thing was interesting for the first 18 months. It's changed. The West is doing what it usually does in being, you know, weak and disunited about Ukraine. And that probably is the right model to think about should we ever want to go for Taiwan. I think these developments are the important ones, not the way in which we were unified. I think that's backward looking now, Eamon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, in what way can a crash in China affect the Irish economy?
Well, it's our exports to China in the first instance. They will already have been affected, to be honest. It's hard to say with precision what they will, but we are the quintessential small open economy, very dependent on world trade in general, and in particular, the export of high-tech goods, chemicals and pharmaceuticals. Those are the three things that we export most of. We don't export cars or coal or anything like that. And China is a big market for that. It's not our biggest market. The most important economy for Ireland is a toss up between Europe and the United States. We export a lot to the United States. We export a lot to Europe. And so China's important.
Let me put it another way. Sorry to interrupt you, Chris. That really our economy is boosted, many people would argue artificially, by the capital gains tax and by the tax paid by American multinationals, which have made a home here in pharma, in technology, and that really has allowed us enormous leeway, hasn't it? And successive governments really have been able to use that money.
Huge. I mean, it'll be about 24 billion euros this year of corporation tax receipts, and possibly higher.
Are they threatened by all of this uncertainty in the world, the dangers that are in the world, the new enmities that are festering? Is all of that a threat to our little piece of economic happiness, shall we say?
Yeah, it's a threat. I don't know how big a threat, and I'll explain why in a moment. But the biggest headwind, actually, will be if a new president in the United States decides that the profits that are being taxed in Ireland need to be taxed in the United States.
Right.
And that's always been a threat for many, many years, but nothing ever happens. The US tax code doesn't change in a way that harms our tax take. They don't seem to be able to get their act together. And a lot of people argue that they should. And again, that will be at the behest of whoever's in charge. And then can they get it through Congress? Always a difficult task. And so there have been reforms to corporate taxation, because not just the United States want these profits taxed what they see as more fairly. Germany and France in particular are trying to get what they see as their fair share of the profits. And so there have been all these efforts made in recent years for global corporation tax reform. And there are some reforms coming. For example, the tax rate has gone up from 12.5% to 15%,
yes,
as a result of these new international agreements. And it's not that's taken years to get through, and we still aren't there yet in terms of being able to implement fully all of these different changes. So I think in theory, in principle, of course, if any one country, particularly the United States, decides to change the rules of the game, then that will be a game changer. But history suggests that they do this slowly, if at all, and find it very difficult to implement, despite the fact that it might seem to some U.S. taxpayers a very obvious thing to do. I think the lobbying power of U.S. corporations is a big factor here, in that, as you know, lobbying generally is a big deal in Washington, D.C. The power of money is huge, and an awful lot of congressmen and senators are persuaded by the lobbying of U.S. multinationals that to keep things the way they are is a good idea. And, you know, money changes hands on the back of it, quite legally, of course.
Let me ask you one final question, Chris, about the prospect of a Trump presidency and growing isolationism in the United States and the damage he could do to Europe in general, and I'm talking economic damage, and also to Ireland in particular, because this guy doesn't have the same script as anyone else, does he?
He does not. And again, we always have to be careful about understanding the difference between what this man promises to do and then what he ends up doing. The two most substantive things that he did during his first presidency was reform the US tax code and gave an awful lot of tax breaks and cuts to rich people and rich corporations. And that's had a huge impact on the US budget deficit, for example. They are borrowing, the government, the US government is borrowing humongous amounts of money at the moment when it shouldn't be. This is an economy, going back to my remarks about it being a good economy, it's an economy at full employment. It's an economy at full capacity. And one of the first things you learn as an economist is that when economies are doing well and when the economy is at full employment, governments shouldn't be borrowing any money. Or if they are, it should be quite small. They're borrowing far too much money for an economy at full employment. And that could cause a problem. Ultimately, it might take ages for the US interest rates, which affect everybody, but both directly and indirectly. Trump has promised to add to his tax cuts and make that problem worse. So that's something well worth watching, because that'll have an impact on our interest rates. The second thing he's promised to do, I mentioned the 60% tariff on Chinese exports to the United States. He's promised a 10% tariff on everybody's exports to the United States, including Ireland's, which will reduce our exports to the United States and will have a direct impact and could trigger a wider trade war, which for a small open economy would not be a good idea. Then there's all the politics, the pulling out of NATO, the not supporting Ukraine, not actually probably caring whether China takes Taiwan or not. All that stuff represents a real and present danger in principle. But the thing that is really puzzling, Eamon, about all of this is that you and I are talking about this. Many people are talking about this. I was reading an article this morning about how last year, all the articles were about whether this felt like 1914 in the lead up to the First World War. People are now starting to write articles about whether it feels like the 1930s with trade wars and polarization of political systems and all the rest of it. This is what people are writing and thinking about. And yet, the all-important financial markets, the ones that I know a little bit about, things like stock markets, things like bond markets, they're behaving as if none of these things are any risk to us at all. Stock markets everywhere, with the exception of China, are at all-time highs. Bond markets, really, really important markets that don't get nearly enough publicity, are extraordinarily stable. So one of two things could be happening there. Markets are being really stupid and are not pricing all of these risks that you and I are talking about properly, which is a real puzzle. It's happened before, but to this extent. Or we could just be wrong in being the worry warts that we appear to be. And markets are telling us quite emphatically, lie down, stop worrying, it'll be okay. And that the threats posed by the Trump presidency in particular, just like during his first term of office, will be more apparent than real.
Okay, Chris, it's fascinating to talk to you. As always, thank you very much. Indeed, just to say in passing, we were assured by our financial regulator here very shortly before our crash that banks were well stocked with money and there was no problem whatsoever, which chimes with what you've just said a little bit. We're very grateful to Chris Johns, Chris, a former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland, and on this, as in most other things, he knows what he's talking about. Football, I think I can do it. We're grateful to Chris, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.